Good heavens, is this really show 24 of the Zip & Co. podcast? I think it is. It's finally here after all this time. I've been working two jobs recently, so it's been very hard to get a show out. But in this show, I want to do something a little special. I have a tribute to a friend of mine, a local painter, musician, and all-around talented guy who passed recently, Trevor Lawrence. I also have the first chapter of my novel, I suppose you could call it. So give that a listen. I include also some Podsafe music from Music Alley, used to be the Podsafe Music Network. You can get in touch with the show many, many ways. My show notes are at www.zip.podomatic.com. I have a comment line of 01305-898-547. If you're outside the UK, just add a plus 44 to that and remove the zero. You can get in touch with me by email at zipshow, zipshow, @gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, MySpace, Twitter. Look for Zipster, Zipster, on all those. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, and SocialCam. So there are many ways you can contact the show. So, as you can see, I've been working hard over the past few months. I think we should have a first piece of music. What do you think? Let's go.
Nothing personal, think I'm in love with you. Needless to say, I hope that you feel it too. Hope you don't mind that I care. I might look familiar. You wonder if we'd ever met before. Now that I found you, I don't wanna miss you no more. Nothing personal, think I'm in love with you. Needless to say, I hope that you feel it too. Hope you don't mind that I care. I just love playing your shadow instead of your guide. I could forever be around you, next to you, by your side. No bank, I'm in love with you. Needless to say, I hope that you feel it too. Hope you don't mind that I care. I was making sure you haven't noticed me while I touched what the object of obsession used to be. Do you get a feeling being wanted? Do you get a feeling you're not alone? Someone you mean a world to, I still practically unknown. Excuse me while I spend another hour with you. Don't get me wrong now, I just wanna pray that you do. Someone you mean a world to, I still practically unknown. Nothing personal, think I'm in love with you. Needless to say, I hope that you feel it too. Hope you don't mind that I care. Nothing personal, think I'm in love with you. Needless to say, I hope that you feel it too. Hope you don't mind. Yeah.
That was Anna Popovic with Nothing Personal from the Podsafe Music Network, now known as Music Alley. Let's have a bit of News Monkey, shall we?
Hey, up, it's the News Monkey.
Ah. What? No, you've got that for us? Okay, well, let's have a look.
Ah, now, let's see what we've got here. Ah, yes. The story of the Fiji mermaid on view at Duke's Auction in Dorchester. Here we go. This is from the Dorset Echo in December of last year. Duke's next auction will feature one of the great hoaxes of the 19th century, the rather gruesome Fiji mermaid. With the head and torso of a monkey and the tail of a fish, this rogue creature was a common feature of sideshows and circuses from the mid-1800s after being introduced by the most famous showman of the time, P.T. Barnum. Presented as a genuine mummified half-mammal, half-fish, crowds flocked to see the exhibit, unaware that what they were actually looking at was a representation of a piece of Japanese folklore, the ningyo, or human fish. Anciently described as a creature with a monkey's mouth, the small teeth of a fish, and a shining golden scales, the ningyo was believed to bring storms and misfortune. Representations were created by fishermen who crudely stitched the two parts together for use in religious ceremonies, and this was almost certainly what Mr. Barnum was passing off as a genuine mermaid. Popular demand for the mermaid led to a host of similar artefacts being discovered and displayed throughout the world in the 19th and 20th centuries. Estimated at £500 to £1,000 and to be sold in the fine art auction held on December 5th, 6th and 7th, Dukes certainly hope this example of a Fiji mermaid will prove as popular as P.T. Barnum's did all those years ago. Ah, let me see now, the next one. Ah, yes, the next one. This one is Weymouth and Portland residents spot another blunder on Monopoly board. I don't know whether you've seen the national press in the past few months, but there has been a Weymouth and Portland version of the famous game Monopoly released. But they've been finding a few problems with it. This is from the Dorset Echo recently. Weymouth and Portland residents spot another blunder on Monopoly board. The luck of the Irish was not smiling on the makers of Weymouth and Portland's Monopoly board after local residents spotted another blunder. Rather than sailing or water sports, which the area is famous for, there was a picture of Irish hurling on the box of the Burroughs Special Edition. This is the second mix-up involving the popular local version of the game, and some 24 boxes containing boards printed in German featuring sites from an area in Switzerland. The special edition features local attractions such as Portland Bill, Chisel Beach, the Sea Life Tower and the Jurassic Coast. The spokesman for makers Winning Moves UK apologised for the mistake. He said, "We are extremely sorry and would like to apologise. It seems we were supplied with an incorrect picture. We are looking into this as a matter of urgency. The mistake caused confusion amongst purchasers who could not make the connection between the seaside town and the Gaelic sport." Weymouth resident Joss Baker, originally from Cork in Ireland, said the designers of the game should go to jail, go directly to jail. She said, "When I saw the box by chance, I could not work out how, why or what an image of the hurling managed to get on the box lid. In all my years living in the town, here hurling has never been played. Our local sports in the town are beach volleyball and sailing, if anything. We do have a hockey club, but I find the whole thing baffling." She added, "There's an Irish-style pub in town, and we do drink the black stuff, but it's all about as far as it goes with the Irish connection to Weymouth and Portland. If they change to new pictures, then the first boxes should be collector's items, I guess. Watch for them on eBay." Deputy Mayor Councillor Ray Bannon said, Curling is definitely not a sport we play here in Dorset. We have sailing, we have beach volleyball tournaments, we have motorbike racing on the beach. Certainly no hurling, but we could always give it a go. We do have twinning links with France and Germany, perhaps. We could set one up for Ireland. It's nice to know the company have apologised. I expect they were happy to get it off their chests for the local community. The game has proven popular since its launch and is available to buy from Amazon.co.uk, Asda.com, Howley's Toy Masters, Toys R Us and WH Smith. A nice piece of advertising for all those stores there. Well, you better get looking for some more news then, hadn't you?
Hi, this is the Zag Band.
You may remember us from show 23, when we discussed our first album, The Gryffindor Collection. Our second album, Have Yourself Your Peace, is now available. It can be obtained from the Zip and Go podcast show, from eBay, the Waverley Arms in Weymouth, and direct via mail order. See our Facebook page for further details. The music you are hearing is from our third album, The Wrath of Graves, which is currently being recorded and we hope to release next year.
I will put a link in the show notes at zip.podomatic.com so you can go to the eBay store and buy the albums now. Something a little different. The Far Out Chronicles, a novel by Peter Lithgow. First chapter, The Turning of the Worm. There will be one who decides, yet knows not how he decides. There will come one who knows, yet knows not how he knows. There will come one who thinks, yet knows not how he thinks. If you know not what this means, you should live in Milton Keynes. Prophecy of Kelnarbuk, date unknown. The son arose from his bed, lit a first cigarette, had a cough and a spit, and wondered what the coming day would bring. Probably the same as yesterday. He was fed up of throwing the same old shadows on the small village that nestled tight in the lee of the snow-capped mountain, and wished he could change careers, become a traffic warden in the Sahara Desert or a scriptwriter for EastEnders, something not too taxing. Some time ago I tried to talk to the moon about it, but she kept running away. With a shrug of resignation, he finished rising over the white peak and peered down on the slowly wakening populace. Gradually the village square came to life. The flower seller with a tray of fresh carnations shuffled to a usual stand beneath the berg-dung-covered statue of the great ornithologist who'd saved the people from a plague of starlings, who was now, himself, getting covered by a plague of seagulls. The knife grinder pedalled to his place, dismounted his heavy battleship grey bicycle, sneezed, swore, and the two rear buttons that held his pants to his braces pinged off. The elastic, held in attention by his rotund frame, whipped up and grabbed him round the neck, bending him double. His half-moon spectacles fell from his jug ears, and for the rest of the day he walked around under the misapprehension he'd just lived through a highly localized earthquake and the scenery had shifted uphill. Meanwhile, the two ill-matching buttons had made their own way in the world. One of them hit an unsuspecting stray cat that was being sick after eating a mouse that was full of wall plaster. The other flew across the square, through an open ground floor window, and landed in an open jar of gobstoppers that at that moment was being greedily scooped out by a small scruffy urchin who would later have need of a good dentist. Finally, the village idiot makes his soggy entrance to continue his life's work, hobbling around the cobbled streets, dressed in a floor-length Macintosh that hung three sizes too big for him, and wearing on his head a green sou'wester that kept slipping over his eyes. He sang selections from Gilbert and Sullivan operettas, and from time to time stopped to refill his green wellies with cold spaghetti, which he kept in a plastic carrier bag just for that purpose. Back in the village square, the gaily painted market stalls were shooting up like BT shares, and the cheerful stallholders stood rubbing their hands in the anticipation of selling 22 carat gold bracelets made of cheap metal and toys that are specifically timed to fall apart once you got them home. As the sun reached its zenith, the heat haze rippled over everything, causing the phalanx of wild geese that swept majestically over the glue factory to quiver as if they were flying through a hall of mirrors. To the west, in a small meadow bounded by a clear flowing stream, something landed. Something green with wings that made the air pop as it settled to earth. Something that shouldn't be in this story, but was. Something sleek and evil smelling that looked a lot like a dragon, which is funny, because that is exactly what it was. Only this one was wearing an MP3 player around its scrawny neck and was singing at the top of its rich baritone voice, totally out of tune.
I'm bad, you know it.
It sang. It drew itself up onto one rear chunky leg, blew a cloud of acrid smoke from its cavernous nostrils and spun on one rear claw, which had the effect of forming something that at the distance looked like a mobile bonfire. This came out half on purpose, half by accident, as a dragon's left claw got stuck in a rabbit hole, toppling it sideways, making the earth shudder as it hit the ground. On impact, the headphones jumped out of its ears, and the MP3 player became smashed. Dolby had arrived. You may be wondering for what dark purpose Dolby had come to this place, where nothing is possible and everything is probable. Or is it everything is possible and nothing is probable? The plot is about to unfold. Dolby picked himself up from the dragon-shaped hole he'd made, which would later serve as an unusually shaped trout hatchery by a midget with hives, and started out for the unsuspecting village, each massive footprint instantly filling with brackish subsurface water that was soon taken over as a bird sanctuary. The glint in his left eye radiated evil. The right radiated where he wanted, so at times he found himself unaccountably walking around in circles. The remains of the ill-fated MP3 player around his neck made him look like an oversized radio-controlled toy that escaped from a film set. He crossed the bridge. Well, that's not entirely true. One leg crossed the bridge, the other made a small tidal wave, and miles downhill surface suffered a wipeout. He finally reached the outskirts of the by now forewarn village and spoke in a low and murderous growl.
I, Dolby the Despicable, have come. Come for the Chosen One. Is he in?
One of the villagers, who was now standing looking up in shock and bewilderment, stepped forward and in an unsure, trembling voice said,
There's nobody here by that name. Are you sure you have the right address?
Dolby had just been told to fetch the One. This was a question beyond his intellect. This was deep. It required him to think, a process he'd yet to get the hang of. He sat down, put a forepaw to his scabby muzzle, and scratched, sending a shower of foul-smelling saliva and rotting flesh onto the poor people below that started an outbreak of acne of epic proportions.
There's no one here called One, is there?
He asked hopefully, putting his paw on his knees and poking the spokesperson with his big toe. The frightened spokesperson looked around for an escape and spotted the idiot.
There's one,
he cried, and vanished into the crowd. At this, Dolby lurched to his feet, scooped the simpleton into his stinking paw, and spoke low in a reverential tone.
Are you the One, the Chosen One? The one amongst all my master is afeard of?
The idiot, whose name was Frank, by the way, opened and closed his mouth like a hyperventilating goldfish, then decided on the correct course of action. Three little girls from school, aren't we? He sang loud and clear, making Dolby drop him in shock. As luck would have it, he landed in a fat bookie who was taking odds on who would get eaten first. Frank got up, brushed himself down, faced the dragon, slowly unbuttoned his mac. The crowd gasped, opened it, showing another mac underneath, and stomped away, his wellies still oozing spaghetti. You have been listening to Chapter 1 of the Far Out Chronicles by Peter Lithgow. Listen for Chapter 2. If you'd like to hear more of the Far Out Chronicles, drop me a line on zipshow@gmail.com or go to my Facebook page or my MySpace page, any pages that you find a link for on the show notes, and let me know. Now, here is something I recorded about a dear friend of mine who passed away recently. Now, I want to tell you about a friend of mine who passed away last year. His name was Trevor Lawrence, and he was a real Weymouth character. He was a musician, painter, raconteur, and he had many, many, many friends in Weymouth. He was originally born in London, I believe. This is what the Echo had to say about him. Trevor Lawrence, 67, was described by friends as one of Weymouth's characters who will be sorely missed. London-born Mr. Lawrence was an actor in his younger days with appearances in TV series such as Doctor Who, and he also became friends with rock star David Bowie after appearing in a film with him. In Weymouth, where he lived for 20 years, he was better known as a painter of mysterious and surreal scenes, as well as entertaining pub crowds on the piano and keeping up a healthy swimming regime off Weymouth Beach. His paintings, which he produced in the early hours of the morning, commanded hefty price tags. Mr. Lawrence, who lived with his mother Joyce in Newbury Road, died peacefully in his sleep. Martin Layton of the Layton Art Gallery on the Harbourside, which had been exhibiting Mr. Lawrence's work for the past 5 years, said his death had come as a shock. He said he was in the gallery and was chuffed to bits that one of his paintings had gone for £1,800. The next day he was gone. It's very sad, he was a real character. Mr. Layton added, he had a few niggling complaints one gets in older age, but there was no heart trouble as far as I know. His death came out of the blue. It was a complete surprise. He kept active and enjoyed life and knew many people. He played the piano and harmonica in the pubs, just had a jam when he felt like it, but he didn't drink or smoke. He was easygoing with a great sense of humour. Mr. Layton described Mr. Lawrence's acrylic on canvas paintings as unique. He said you couldn't fail to recognise one of Trevor's works. No one painted like him. His work had actually been growing in popularity. Mr. Layton said that he had a collection of Mr. Lawrence's work still to sell, which he expects to be snapped up quickly. In the past, Mr. Lawrence's work had been bought by celebrities including David Bowie, Jack Palance, Clive Owen and the late Claire Rayner. In an interview with The Echo in 2010, Mr. Lawrence said, "A lot of artists just do one type of scene, but mine are all different. I actually hate painting, but it is my wife. It doesn't mind if I go off with other mistresses, such as my piano playing and swimming in the sea, but she always wants me to return to her at night." The funeral of Trevor Lawrence will be held at Weymouth Crematorium on Friday, July 20th at 1:45 p.m. Some other friends of his called my comment line and left memories. I'd like to play them now for you.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing? Ian Sedwell. About Trevor. Yeah, he's a great, a very self-effacing guy and very conscious of, how should we put it? It's hard to say. I'll give you a story. We were down in the galley one night, some years ago now, and we were having a rather heated political discussion. And Trevor got really, really cross. Really cross. He got to his feet, grabbed his jacket, and said, "Right, outside now, fight." And I looked at him, and he was wrestling with a jacket which had got caught over the back of his chair. And he was getting more and more tatty with his jacket. I said, "I can tell you're an artist." He said, What do you mean? When you're making a real exhibition of yourself." Hey, Trevor fell about laughing. He was always very worried about his music. He wondered that people liked it. He was always very worried that they felt he was somehow incompetent, incapable. He wasn't. He was a great musician. Came straight from the heart. And I just loved the guy and I missed him hugely.
Hey, Trevor Lawrence. As I knew him, he was a man of many parts. In fact, you could say he was a walking mass of contradictions. He could be bombastic and overbearing, but the next minute lacking in confidence and unsure of himself. Besides his enthusiasms for music and art, I found he was interested in languages and issues in psychology, philosophy, and religion. A great spirit with a contagious sense of humour who was continually learning, struggling, and laughing. This is John Marshall. Thanks a lot.
Hi, Peter. This is Sarah Shrugs from the write-off in Weymouth. I only met Trevor a couple of times, but I was taken with a guy immediately. It was in the King's Arms on the harbour side at one of the jazz nights he used to play at. He straight away we got chatting, and he just seemed like a real artistic, intelligent, really eloquent bloke. And then he got on the keyboards doing some improv boogie woogie with a chap called Guy Gardner and absolutely blew me away. I'm just sad that I'm not going to be able to get to know Trevor a bit better, because I think he's an absolutely amazing guy. Cheers, Peter, and good luck with your podcasting. I'm going to hopefully tune in sometime soon. Bye.
I would like to personally thank Ian, John and Sarah for leaving their memories. I remember one time I went into Nero's coffee shop, which is a sort of second home for me here in Weymouth, and I met Trevor, and he was talking about his appearance in Doctor Who with John Pertwee in an episode called Invasion of the Dinosaurs, I believe. I had my iPad with me, so I looked on YouTube to see if I could find the episode, and yes, there it was. And I actually showed him the scene where he appeared. He seemed totally amazed that he could do that, and he went around the store telling everybody that there he was on the screen. According to Trevor's IMDb profile, he was in 7 titles, Quatermass as Catskin Man, Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter as Deke, Doctor Who as Lodge, Invasion Part 1, 1974, BBC Player of the Month, The Love Girl and the Innocent, he played the part of Angel, Zedcar's TV series, Dormitory Leader in System, 1971, Doomwatch TV series, Passerby in the Human Time Bomb, 1971, The Main Chance TV series, starred as Ziggy in Body and Soul, and also did Airbrush Artist Uncredited for 2001 A Space Odyssey, which I was amazed of when he actually told me that he'd done it. One of his other friends in Weymouth, Anne Newman, the owner of Imagine Books here in Weymouth, who was also an artist, left a memory on the Trevor Lawrence tribute page I created on Facebook. She says, "We used to talk about art. He understood what I meant when I talked about how art made me feel. He told me not to sell my work too cheap, so I won't. He was an amazing character. We used to say we'd been Trevored if he'd stopped it in the street to talk, perform. Looking back now, I can see we were privileged to be Trevored. R.I.P. I'd like to include one of Trevor's favourite musicians right here to finish this spot, the great Jimi Hendrix and All Along the Watchtower.
There must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, take my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody up in his world.
Have a YouTube channel that I call Zip TV. It's incorporated with my free app as well. If you have Chirp on your iPad or iPhone, listen towards the end of the program and I will include a Chirp that will take you directly to the app for free. Anyway, Zip TV is included on the app and it's got a list of a range of local authors who are promoting their own books. I think it's really interesting to listen to local authors who self-publish their own books or have published by regular publishers promoting their own books. Most of my interviews take place at Imagine Books here in Weymouth when they have signing days. So I will include a link to the YouTube channel on my show notes. So just go there. Have a look at the videos. It's all free. There's no charge. And leave a comment or leave a like. It's all good. So here's the interview that I did recently. Here I am at Imagine Books again today, and I'm talking to Carol Hunt about her new book, The Portland Giant. So can you just give us a sort of quick promo about the book?
The Portland Giant is the fourth book in the Portland Chronicles. and it's the last book as well.
Right.
It's set in the autumn, and each book has represented one of the seasons. And the giant is inspired by a fascinating cliff formation on the east coast of Portland, and by stories about giants of old who were called the slingers, who threw rocks at invaders on Portland.
Right.
So all those things inspired the story, and there's also lots of ghosts in the story, so it's quite scary.
The ghosts, anything to do with the ghost tunnels up there in Portland?
There is a reference to the ghost tunnels, yes, but I've also got ghosts at Portland Castle,
right,
including the Lavender Lady, yeah, and I've got a headless horseman who's galloping around the island, and a cavalier and a highwayman.
Is it a sort of a funny story, or is it a... What genre would you say it's in?
Well, that's a good question. We were talking about that earlier. I would say it's magical realism, yeah, rather, right, than fantasy, because it's about, yeah, real children, contemporary children, I mean, rather than real. And it's set in a real place. It's on Portland. But they time travel, and they go back to the past, and they encounter a Roman lighthouse. But it's set in a very real setting at,
right,
the same time.
Okay, just to tell people also, you are on my YouTube channel, aren't you?
That's right, yes. So if you go to Peter's channel, you can find my video.
Okay, so you can see what you look like there.
And we were talking about Portland Pirates there, which is the third book in the series, so right, yes.
And that's available from here at Imagine Books.
That's right. Imagine
Anywhere
Books
else?
In Weymouth. It's also available on Portland from Whitestone's Cafe and places all over Weymouth, Portland, and around South Dorset.
Okay, we'll leave it at that for today, and you can get home out of the rain.
Thank you.
Thanks for the interview.
Thanks.
Nope, I won't do it. I don't care if it's just a trailer for our podcast. It is advertising, and I'm not getting involved. Are you calling me a pervert? Oh, sorry, you just said perverse. Still, that's not very nice. Do you remember what Bill Hicks said about advertising?
By the way, if anyone here is in advertising or marketing, kill yourself.
There you go. That's what I think. I'm not taking part. I'm not going to sit here and say, why not download the Dorchester Online Radio Company podcast, a compilation of the week's best bits from Dorset's premier local broadcaster. Available on our website, www.dorchesteronlineradiocompany.org, or through iTunes, just search DORC. Oh, and on Tumblr. And Facebook. The DORC podcast. Worst things happen at sea, you know. I will not do it. I will not sell out like that.
Don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go. Don't go. Don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go. Walk away, don't turn around in the middle of the day. Nighttime come and I go to sleep. Don't even get up for a bite to eat. Don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go, don't go. Don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go. Come on, stop, wait. You move, girl, I'm in a fall. So don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go, don't go. Don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go. Say don't leave, don't walk away. Don't turn around in the middle of the day. Nighttime come and I go to sleep. Don't even get up for a bite.
Don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go, don't go. Don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go. Stop and wait, baby. I put your car keys away tonight. I've seen it happen once before. I ain't gonna lose my baby no more. So don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go, don't go. Don't go nowhere without me, baby. Don't go. I said stop.
Arnold McCullough with Don't Go Nowhere from the Podsafe Music Network. Now, let's have some weird stuff, shall we?
Weird stuff!
The first story on this weird stuff spot is a local story from the Dorset Echo. Dummy raiders make off with mannequin. Thieves smashed a window and stole a lingerie-clad mannequin from a shop in Weymouth. Police were called to Erotica Bell on Ranley Road in the early hours following reports of a break-in. Officers are appealing for witnesses or anyone with information to help them with their inquiries. Shop owner Jonathan Spencer said, "It was totally unnecessary and very expensive break-in. It has really annoyed me and I don't understand why anyone would take these items. The burglars threw a sack truck through the window to gain entry." He added, "The life-size mannequin is easily recognisable as she is in a seated position and we had to saw off her left foot to fit her in the window. This is the first incident like this and it's really quite strange." A spokesman for Dorset Police said, "We had a call at 1:02 on Tuesday morning from a member of the public who had heard the glass being smashed. The window of Erotica Bell had been damaged. Officers attending the scene and confirmed that a mannequin had been stolen from the store. We would like anyone with information or who saw anything to contact us." The next item also comes from the Dorset Echo. Weymouth Seafront Light gains a lampshade. A bright spark has found another way to protest against the local council. A homemade lampshade has appeared on the streetlight on Weymouth Seafront to make a point about the bulb being too bright. The quirky pink lampshade, complete with feather boa, was first spotted at Greenhill yesterday morning and is delighting residents and passers-by. A notice has also been tied to a lighting column which says, "Do not remove the lampshade." The person behind the stunt, who did not wish to be named, said there was a serious point to be made because the bulb from the streetlight was aggressive. Victorian lighting columns from the Esplanade have been relocated to Greenhill as part of the Seafront Regeneration Scheme. Strings of fairy lights were also removed and new laser lights are to be installed on the main seafront. They are there now. Weymouth and Portland Borough Council said the Victorian columns were being switched to an area of the promenade which was poorly lit. But Greenhill residents say the bulb from one of the columns which has been positioned between two homes on the seafront is too bright. Val Cole, who lives opposite, said, "We used to have an uninterrupted view and now the light has spoiled that. On top of that, the light comes directly into our room. It's light pollution." Mrs. Cole, 59, added, "The lampshade is brilliant. It's a great laugh. People have been stopping and taking photographs." Angela and John Murphy said the Victorian lights were beautiful but object to the brightness. Retired Mr. Murphy, 53, said, "It's like a car headlight. Even from a distance, it lights up our garden. It's like having a torch shone in your eyes." Mrs. Murphy, 51, added, "I love the lampshade. It's fantastic. It even has little LED lights in it. It's bringing people down this end of the seafront. It's a talking point." Boat builder Nick Hoare, 61, who lives opposite the light, said, "The problem is that it's a horizontal light. I like looking out to sea at night, but I can't do that anymore because it's blinding. The light is intrusive. It needs a baffle so that the light shines downwards." He added, "The lampshade hasn't made much difference, but it's a beautifully made and a gesture of defiance." The person who put up the lampshade, a resident, said, "Some friends helped me and we ensured we were very safe doing it. It's just a way of saying, turn it down, please. It's aggressive and blinding. Nobody has smiled at the light bulb as they smiled at the lampshade. The seafront should be full of smiles." Weymouth and Portland Borough Council spokesman for Partnerships and Special Projects, Howard Legg, said, "We're sorry if anyone has been disturbed by the light. When this scheme was in the planning stage, the Borough Council tried to take into account all residents' views. He thanked residents for bringing this to the Council's attention and said the authority will look into resolving the issue." If you have a weird local story, UFOs, ghosts, even Bigfoot spotting in Weymouth, let me know on zipshow, ZZIPPSHOW, @gmail.com, or call the telephone number you'll see on the website at www.zipzzipp.podomatic.com.
Weird stuff!
The Zip & Co. podcast show has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial of the Audible service. Audible themselves have over 60,000 audiobook titles available for you to download. Go to my show notes at www.zipzzipp.podomatic.com and click on the audible.co.uk icon for further details. When you sign up, you can have a 30-day free trial of the Audible service, which will allow you to download a free book of your choice to keep for free. You can cancel if you like, but you still get to keep the freebie. Listen to a bestseller on your iPod, iPhone, or any mobile device today. Thanks, Audible. Yes, thank you, Audible. I'm also an affiliate with Amazon.co.uk, so you can go there and get any books, CDs, and that kind of thing from Amazon. I'm also an affiliate with 123-Reg, which is a domain name and domain hosting company. So I also have adverts on my YouTube channel, so you can have a look at those while you're there. and also an advert on my free app that helps support the development of the free app. If you were to sponsor a show or advertise on a show even, please get in touch and we'll work something out. Just before I go, I'd like to tell you that recently I did some bumpers, some podcast bumpers for a Canadian podcast. It's The Weird Show. Let me see. There it is. You can access the show at theweirdshow.com, just one word. And hear the encaffeinated one talking about all kinds of great weird stuff. So have a listen to those shows and see if you can see if you can hear the bumpers that I was in. I also did a voice presentation for the Zag Band, who we talked about earlier in the show, on their album Have Yourself Your Peace, where I played the part of Paternoster, the priest, the vicar. So if you buy the album, you can hear that also. So I think that's round about everything up. So I'll say goodbye for now, and I'll see you on show 25. I hope that's not going to be another long time that you hear. All right, if you have any news at all, please get in touch with Zipshow, Zipshow at gmail.com, and you can might be even included in the show. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
We must plan for tomorrow night.
Why? What are we going to do tomorrow night?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
The Zip & Co. podcast show is a media presentation by Zip Creatives.